I mean, they got the federal course.
They know your
money that affects our living in here.
I think you know it is a situation to come to report.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Government Operations and Veterans Affairs Committee. Today we have two bills before us. House File 1703, which deals with the Help America Vote Act, the federal program, and House File 885, which deals with the construction rules for food establishments, something like that. So it's going to be an interesting day. We have a group of students with us from the First Baptist School. They're juniors and seniors from Rosemont, and we'd like to welcome you to the Capitol. Okay, Representative Lippman, you're up. You want to move your bill?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I move that House File 1703 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance.
Okay. Representative Lippman,
thank you.
The floor is yours.
Mr. Chairman, members, I think we have a historic opportunity today. We have the prospect that $35 million of federal funds will be sent to Minnesota over the next few years for the renovation of voting equipment and to literally change the map on elections as they're conducted here in Minnesota. The only federal requirement that I can see of any moment is that we in the legislature, both parties and bicamerally, have to cooperate in order to get the $35 million. Now, that's a heady challenge in these times, but I think that the benefit to each of us as individual voters and as leaders of folks who want their votes calculated accurately and in a timely fashion, that the promise is great, and the question, of course, remains, can we cooperate with each other in order to realize this historic potential? I hope that we can. With the specifics of 1703, in a way to try to summarize it in a very shorthand fashion, it's compliance with the federal mandates of the Help America Vote Act, but it has a Minnesota flavor to it. It reflects, I think 1703 reflects our values, a Minnesota implementation, if you will, of the current standards and extends them in ways that are familiar to ordinary voters and also to election administrators. So we're taking the federal money and complying with the few strictures that there are in Help America Vote Act, but doing it in a way that I think will be familiar to most and inspire public confidence and extend Minnesota's record, not only in high voter turnout, but in elections in which your constituents and mine can have public confidence. What about our Minnesota flavor? Well, the 1703 provides that any voting system that will be ultimately purchased, or combination of systems that will ultimately be purchased with the have a dollars, be able to permit the voter to verify the ballot and to make changes if there are errors. Again, something that's quite familiar. Have a permanent paper record of that ballot for later auditing or use in either the recount or challenge procedures. Able to interface with the existing infrastructure to the extent that it's precinct ballot counters, and also meet familiar and very long-standing certification standards that are used by the Secretary of State. So we have this opportunity to get $35 million worth of federal money to renovate equipment practice as it's practiced. The purple colored precincts, as we see here on the map, are those who use precinct ballot counters. The green precincts are central count precincts where there may well be hand ballots marked and then sent to a central facility for counting with a machine counter. And then the tan precincts are the ones where it's simply hand counted, no machine intervention at all. With this federal money, I think we can change the map in a way that makes it more uniform and inspires public confidence and the speed and accuracy with which they're accounting. Also, we could almost eliminate the disenfranchisement due to errors, which happens in central count and hand count precincts, the non-purple portions of that map, and so that we can draw people into the process in a way that's meaningful and keep them into the process. For all of this promise, I hope that you'll help me get this through with the members that are on state government finance, not only this committee but the next committee, and also quickly pass this on the House floor, because it's the kind of reform that does us proud and that works for the state of Minnesota. With that, I'd like to introduce our very distinguished guests who are familiar to this committee, Deputy Secretary of State, former State Representative Tony Kilkuski, and also legal analyst Bert Black, former representative and now Deputy Kilkuski.
Welcome to our committee by a former deputy who is now a state representative.
Yes.
You kind of match each other, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, for the record, Tony Kilkuski, Deputy Secretary of State. Members, seems like just yesterday I was sitting where you were sitting, looking at election issues and other issues for government operations. In fact, I'm really happy to be here. We are kind of in a historic time. And I was sharing this with some of the members of the audience before I came down to the table here. It hasn't been very many times the federal government has actually issued a decision and passed on a mandate to the states dealing with elections. Most of the time it was left up to us. But we have in front of us today an opportunity to really go forward with a bill that provides for the state of Minnesota an opportunity for the voters and for all voters to be able to cast a ballot, to be able to correct that ballot, and also for the disabled community the opportunity to vote in private. And that's a very historic opportunity that is in front of us. We debated last year in this committee dealing with issues of HAVA. But today we're looking at, and we listened to those issues as we were debating those issues. And today we bring forward a bill that I believe really took into consideration all of the discussions that we went through both in this committee, in Finance Committee, on the House floor, brought this forward. And this bill does a number of things. And one of the biggest issues that was raised in this committee was a paper verified audit trail. And the bill in front of you today and the approach that we are taking provides us with that paper verified audit trail. That was one of the biggest debates that we had. It went for a long time, and I think we've taken care of that issue with this bill. The other thing that it does do, it provides consistency and uniformity in the voting process for voters across the state. And I think, you know, some people shudder at that word uniformity, but I think in a voting system, I think it's a very important word, that voters are treated the same way with the same opportunity, and the system does that. The bill also provides us with a chance taking a look at replacing existing equipment, looking at compatibility issues, but it's a very important issue in terms of as we look forward to making that map and looking at the differences to bring that map into an overall operation that we're going to be very proud of. Minnesota has been a leader in the election process, in making innovations, and also in taking a look at voter turnout. And I'm very happy to say that I really believe that when this bill passes, we again are going to be a leader, and we can be very proud of the election process that is facing us with the new HAVA compliance. And Mr. Black and myself are here to answer any of your questions as we go forward today. And I would like to turn it back to Representative Lippman.
Thank you. We're of course eager for to answer questions. Is Ms. Cross here?
Or? Yes, she is.
Perhaps if we can hear from an accessibility specialist from the Minnesota State Council on Disability. We have Margot Endemicki Cross here, and perhaps
I can move.
Okay, that would, and if you take the chair with you.
Nice.
Thank you, Ms. Cross. Thank you so much for joining us.
That was fun.
Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the
government. Appreciate you coming down today.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Representative Rhodes, members of the GovOps Committee, thank you for having this hearing today. And
you're going to have to just say who you are, but there's a tape going, I'm sorry.
Is that good?
Yeah.
My name is Margo Imdick-Cross, and I'm the Accessibility Specialist for the Minnesota State Council on Disability. I'm here today to speak in support of House File 1703, authored by Representatives Lippman, Kahn, Rhodes, Hilty, and Hawes. One of the most precious rights of being an American citizen is the right to vote, and the right to vote privately and independently. With the new election equipment envisioned by the authors of House File 1703, Minnesotans with disabilities in every precinct polling place throughout our great state will experience independence in the voting process. Many persons with disabilities will not only have the right to vote, but full access to polling place and an ability through the availability of new election equipment to vote privately and independently for the very first time. As many are aware, we are talking about a significant number of people. Approximately 20% of our nation's population has a disability as defined by the Americans with Disabilities Act. As our society ages, that number will grow considerably, with many individuals with age-related sight impairments and physical limitations who will directly benefit from this very important piece of legislation. In conjunction with the Minnesota Office of Secretary of State County Auditors Conference and Election Equipment Vendor Fair on December 11th and 12th, 2003, many individuals with disabilities had the opportunity to experience new voting equipment that allows people with disabilities to vote independently and privately. We were able to observe the new emerging technologies and features designed specifically for persons with disabilities. We actually had an opportunity to use the voting equipment and to find out for ourselves that it really works. We have experienced a very good and productive working relationship with the Minnesota Office of Secretary of State as we cooperatively assist in the implementation of the Help America Vote Act, HAVA. We believe that the Office of Secretary of State has listened to our disability-related concerns and acted on our input. In addition, we have mobilized activists in the disability community to visit and observe polling place accessibility. Most recently, we have worked to create an extensive accessibility checklist and diagnostic tool that local governments can use to make sure that their selected polling places are fully accessible. We have also worked on implementation of the HAVA grant initiative that will provide local jurisdiction with the funds necessary to improve accessibility for persons with disabilities in the polling place. Today, we're working together to see that each and every polling place in Minnesota will have the necessary election equipment that persons with disabilities need to vote privately and independently in conformity with the Help America Vote Act, HAVA. We ask for your support in this important endeavor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any questions for the witness? Seeing none, thank you very much. Oh, Representative Solberg, I'm sorry.
Not for the witness, but for somebody.
Okay, go ahead.
I notice in my area there's an awful lot of the green and yellow, but many of those are mail-in ballots. How does the optical scanner deal with mail-in ballots? Or are we doing away with mail-in ballots?
Representative Lippman.
Chairman Rhodes, Representative Solberg, I don't believe that this would impact if they're entitled to run, not hold a precinct per se, but run the election by mail.
Mr. Chairman?
To the extent that you have a precinct, an actual polling place, slot. I think that's where we would cite the equipment. But if the county or the municipality is not going to be running a polling place and conducting the balloting by mail, and they're permitted under certain circumstances to do that by statute, that would be a separate arrangement.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the optical scanners that I've seen are larger pieces of paper generally that you push through, and do you envision mailing those out and. Or is the equipment have a different design of the optical scanner?
Chairman Rhodes, Representative Solberg, it could be done. I think the problem, of course, would be are you using the right scanner?
Using the right what?
The right marking instrument if you were to send out an optical scan ballot, and also likewise with regards to folding, whether that would also cause a problem, you know, for it to be returned in the security envelope. So it's not my understanding that with mail-in precincts, that those formats are used.
Mr. Chairman, I think we need to at least address that issue because I know in Cochise County, first of all, there's hardly anybody lives there, and if you're going to have a precinct,
I think they have a representative from there, though.
Yeah, they got
one of the best. Yeah.
But I mean, seriously, I think there's only very few areas in the whole county that do not have mail-in ballots. International Falls, North Home, Little Fork, Big Falls, and that's about it, I guess. The rest of them are scattered out, you know, with just a four or five people in each township. And in my area, I have an awful lot of mail-in ballot precincts. So we want them counted, but either that or I think we need to be able to address that issue somehow. It was either the equipment or the design of the ballot.
Just out of curiosity, do we know what other states are doing with that same issue? We obviously can't be the only one.
I don't, but perhaps that would be a way to find out a little bit.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it is an important issue because, I mean, I'm not necessarily a big fan of mail-in ballots, but I'm also not a big fan of having three election judges sit for 8 hours and have five votes with the expensive equipment in it. It seems that for some places the mail-in ballot is extremely appropriate, and we need to be able to have that.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that we're talking about having precincts or polling places for necessarily every precinct, that the practice there wouldn't change, but to the extent that a polling place is hosted, we want to make sure that they have the resources to have the best and most up-to-date equipment, and ones that allow disabled voters, if they're coming to the polling place, to vote in privacy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think they do that. I mean, in many cases with mail-in ballots, if you want to change your ballot or something, if you don't have a precinct, come to the courthouse. But I think if you're going to have some kind of electronic counting system that's centrally located for those mail-in precincts, we have to be able to address either the equipment or the design of the ballot.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. Indeed.
Do you have any other testifiers?
Not in support.
Wow.
I think there are some
opposition. Representative Kahn, you had a question?
Well, Mr. Chairman, obviously I'm very pleased to see this form of the bill. I do have a whole pile of roll call votes with me from the last year where an awful lot of members of this committee voted in opposition to the very things that we're saying that we're doing today. So I hope you understand why you did that, and you have very good reasons for why that was totally inappropriate to want to do last year, but it's totally appropriate to do this year. I did find one place where Seifert took the totally courageous step of abstaining on it. But most of the rest of the people,
this is what makes America great. We can all compromise in the end.
Most of the people who were voting strongly voted no, but I do have one word that I want changed unless it can be explained to me.
Okay.
And that's on page 2, line 21. I'd like to strike the last word on that line, considered. I can't figure out what that means. So it says, it just says equipment that meets the specifications must be certified to any extent required by Minnesota statutes. I don't know if there's, else someone needs to explain to me what the addition of that word considered means.
Representative Lippman?
Well, I guess the question is it a drafting question, if I could propound one back, or a substantive question? I think the intent is not to have vendors who are technically compliant with the request for proposal have to go through the separate certification process as if they were just offering the equipment outside of the procurement. I think the word considered is intended to mean deemed, and I'd be pleased to make that substitution unless you think it's inappropriate that, on the substantive matter, that a vendor which is technically compliant be deemed to have met the certification. I think it is the functional equivalent. We were just trying to not oblige one to go through two processes.
Well,
they mean the same thing.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lippman, I think the way to do that would then be the RFP requiring the certification. Because the RFP,
what?
I mean, I think these, you know, I don't want to, I completely agree that you shouldn't have to do it twice, but you have to do it, but you should have to do it once. And so I think if the RFP requires that, then, you know, then it's obvious that they've met the RFP, and so, but at this word considered, looks as if you're allowed to kind of anoint it without any requirement that they actually be certified. And I just, and if there's some reason why they shouldn't be certified, then we should get rid of that requirement. But I don't like the kind of, you know, what looks like the squishiness of adding that word.
They're conferring.
I think the intention is that that the RFP mirror the certification process, and that they result in the same types of equipment. I think the concern and the reason why the language was drafted this way is that that if you were technically compliant, that for a bureaucratic matter or compliance with the rules, that they wouldn't send you through the exact same process.
I think leaving out the word considered. If the certification is in the RFP, then it's taken care of, because it can't be responsive to the RFP unless it.
I think with the addition of a few words, we could make that change. Is that something you'd want us to suspend briefly and work on and come back, maybe take the other bill, or in state government finance?
I would just as soon take out the word considered, and then I would just as soon, if there's some problem that comes up with, either amend 206.57 or, you know, or if we need some other words to put it in. I think we agree. See, this seems to me that the RFP wouldn't necessarily have to set forth a requirement for certification. And if there's something wrong with that statute, let's get rid of it. But the RFP wouldn't have to set it forward necessarily. And then you'd be able to just say, well, then you'd be able to use that word considered and not actually do the certification.
Yeah, I like that. Well, what would we delete?
Well, it depends on it. What stage?
Right.
Because it must be compatible with existing precinct contracts. So when it comes to that, it sounds like it has to be considered certified.
Okay, hold on. Well, let me get that part first. Okay.
Representative Lippman.
I think I have an amendment.
She's got the amendment. The question.
Okay.
No. Let's hear what he said.
Okay. Forgive me. I'm sorry.
I don't need it.
We were scribbling while you were talking. I wasn't as attentive as I should have been.
No.
I guess what Mr. Black says, which I like a great deal, is delete all the words after the period on line 20 on page 2. Delete line 21. And delete up to before the word required, the words on line 22, and instead say,
and instead insert.
Well, you're going to have to identify yourself.
I'm sorry. My name is Bert Black. I'm a legal analyst with the Office of the Secretary of State. And thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Instead insert responses to the request for proposal must include certification pursuant to, and then we continue on with the existing language where it starts Minnesota statutes.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
Maybe not pursuant to, because then you get required by.
Or required by. We could, okay, certification, and then required by. And then at the end of that sentence on line 24, before the period insert to be considered.
Okay, we're going to have...
and perhaps Ms. McKnight can help
could
on that,
we
too.
Read it back to us where we think we have it, and then we'll see if Representative Kahn agrees that that's what she wants to.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members, I think the language suggested by Bert Black would be page 2, line 20, delete everything after the period, then page 2, delete line 21, delete line 22 before the word required, and insert responses to the request for proposal must include certification, then continuing with that sentence that is in the bill now. And on page 2, line 24, before the period, insert the phrase, to be considered.
Yeah. Sounds fine.
Did you want a roll call on this, Representative Kahn, to add to your list? And Representative Seifert, is it okay?
I'm grateful for Mr. Black and members' patience okay. as we...
On the amendment, is there any discussion? All right. Everybody understand it? All in favor of the amendment as... Representative Kahn is accepted, and Ms. McKnight explains, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Amendments adopted. Now we're back on the bill of discussion, and I had Representative Ellison has a question. Okay, and then I have Thiessen and Hilty. And then if there's anybody in the audience who wants to testify against the bill, you'll get your chance to know that.
This is a question for any of our testifiers. You know, I think it's a good thing that we have the optic scan and the paper ballot, but could you speak to the issue of the reliability of the method proposed in the bill? Does it have an error rate? Has it been studied to that extent?
Well, I can just at a very high level, Mr. Chairman, Representative Ellison. One, I think that that this bill it sets out broad standards, but is not so vendor specific or even technology specific. I think it suggests that compatibility with a precinct optical scan, but it doesn't certainly oblige that result, or even a particular vendor. One or more vendors is permitted by the language. With regards to precinct ballot counters, I think there's been numerous studies that show that the error rates are exceptionally low, very very low, in the ones out of 10,000. Type of magnitude, as opposed to a hand count or a central count, where there are much higher rates of spoilage, particularly from overvoting, which is I vote for both John Kerry and George Bush, or whatever the result might be, and those being inconsistent votes, the ballot is spoiled. In the central count and hand count precincts, that ballot can't be returned because it's been commingled with others. The voter has left the precinct. In the precinct ballot counter. Precincts, the error is identified by the machine and returned to the voter. And so, obviously, the opportunity to correct eliminates most of the problems. And so there's very, very tiny error rates. But perhaps Deputy Kilkuski or Mr. Black have other thoughts on that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Ellison. Representative Lippman, as a former deputy, understands that counting machine. And one of the biggest areas for spoiled ballots is overvoting, undervoting. And the precinct machines do the thing here to correct most of those errors. So the spoilage rate on those machines is very, 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 very low because of the fact. And depending on the statistics, I think I don't have the exact statistics in front of me. I didn't bring that information with me, but I can get the... I'll get some of those to you if you'd like, and I will do that for you.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Ellison, let me just add, from the perspective of recounts, I've done a number of recounts where we've had these ballots, and it's very difficult. Those votes just don't change. I've seen problems with human issues with respect to these recounts, but not machine issues. And the other thing is that we'll have a chance to set a high standards through the RFP process.
Representative Ellis.
This is again a question for any of the testifiers. If there is some sort of error, some sort of discrepancy between the number of votes that the machine might register and the number that would actually appear on the ballot, who would bear the cost of of conducting the recount.
That errors on the ballot?
Well, no, what I mean is if there's a rare, if there's a need for a recount, who would, if there's a machine error, how would that be, how would that be addressed? If the machine miscounts the ballot and there's a need for a recount.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Ellison, of course, if it's an automatic recount, that cost is borne by government. If it's not within the closeness requiring an automatic recount, a recount can be requested by the individual candidates. If you're in that latter situation and there's a machine issue, while the statutes don't currently address that, certainly that would be a cause for looking at maybe the certification of that machine. That's an issue that we could consider including again in the RFP process, so that the vendors understand that if there are problems, that they may bear some costs.
Representative Lippman, is that something you would consider if in cases where there is a machine error, that the costs could be borne by the machine manufacturer?
Yes, because outside the 1% limitation, roughly, for an automatic recount, your only remedy under Minnesota law would be under Chapter 209 to fund for your own recount. And it's true, it's not only the candidates, it's any registered voter could pick up that discrepancy and inspire that process. But, yeah, we're certainly open to that. Okay. I think the risk is very low because this is a great product in general.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a more general question about how the RFP process works, and the question is coming from this perspective. Subdivision 2 is where we find all these requirements that the RFP has to include, the paper record, and all those things that I think we all agree are so important. And Subdivision 3 says, after receiving these responses, the Secretary of State's office can select a vendor. If this, just in general, the RFP process, could the RFPs come back and no one has one of these things, and then the Secretary of State could pick something that doesn't meet Subdivision 2? I mean, how does that process work? Or
Mr. Chairman, Representative Keeson, I see this as a delegation of authority from the Minnesota Legislature to an officer in the executive branch, in that we've set out the requirements under which she can spend the federal funds, because the federal funds aren't necessarily given to the Secretary of State; they're given to the state of Minnesota, and that we're doing prescriptions on how that authority can be exercised. I think the risk of that is actually fairly low, because for those folks who had a chance to go to the vendor fair, I think there are lots of different technologies and vendors who are currently have off-the-shelf items that would be compliant. And I think actually there's going to be a vigorous competition for this opportunity, and not no vendors at all. But I would suggest to you that she doesn't have the authority to rewrite the requirements, because that's what we're doing here today if this gets enacted.
Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure that actually answered the question, but you know, she doesn't. Reading this, the Secretary of State's office, you know, when she's selecting a vendor, doesn't necessarily have to abide by the. Maybe she does. That's why I'm asking generally about the process. If the RFP is she required to select something that meets all the RFP requirements?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Thiessen, I think by the amendment that we just passed. That the certification process is fairly rigorous, and so I think that you've included that. What we said there was that in order to be validly considered, that the RFP must comply with, must go through, the machine must be certified in order for that RFP to be responsibly considered. So I think the answer is, number one, the RFP, just by what we just did, we've always contemplated that it would be highly technical and lots of specifications. I think we just put that right in this bill. And I think that if somebody did not comply, we could not award it to them now.
did not comply with this,
with the certification.
Now, certification doesn't cover producing a permanent record of a ballot, and it doesn't recover a paper ballot, not any of those things that you have in subdivision 2, right? Or does it that?
I think it does under the current certification, because the certification is geared towards the precinct count optical scan. I might also point out, if you take a look at page 2, lines 8 through 14, that also puts that right in there. So I think we're mindful of your concern.
The purchase must be of a certified precinct count.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thiessen, if I can add, I would suggest to you, although I don't have it right in front of me to read chapter and verse, that chapters 8220 and 8230 of the rules provide for exactly that result.
Require all the things in subdivision 2.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hilty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Mr. Chair and members, I want to express my gratitude to the Secretary of State's office and to Representative Liplin for bringing this bill forward. I think that if we can iron out some of the few remaining details of the bill, that we have the prospect of having the absolutely premier voting system in the United States if this comes to pass, and I certainly hope that it does. Question I want to raise, Mr. Chair, is one that I have discussed with Deputy Kilkuski and Mr. Black and with Representative Lipman regarding a post-election security review. The Secretary of State's office, in fact, has offered a draft amendment dealing with that problem, and I think that we have at least in principle an agreement that it's something that needs to be dealt with. I had contemplated offering this amendment or a version of this amendment in the committee today, but the more I thought about it, the more questions arose, and I didn't think that, frankly, that would be possible to anticipate every possible perspective on this problem and come up with something that would satisfy everyone. So what I hope to do instead is just throw out the questions for discussion, and hopefully we can reach some consensus that would result in our drafting an amendment dealing with this problem and perhaps attaching it to the bill of state government finance. The question basically is this. A system that provides, as this proposal does, for a paper trail, a voter-verified paper trail, is great. It's totally what's needed, but it leaves one unanswered question, which is, does the tally of votes that's recorded by the optical scan equipment correspond to the votes that were actually cast? There can be questions about that. This is basically a computerized system. It's capable of malfunction. It's capable, perhaps, of being tampered with. There have been a number of questions that have arisen in other states and other jurisdictions regarding the tally of votes. And there's a simple way to assure that this does not occur, or at least to have a sampling that suggests that everything is as it should be, and that is to take a randomly selected number of precincts statewide and do a hand recount of the paper ballots to make sure that that tally corresponds to the tally that was electronically recorded, which is what we would refer to as a post-election security review. The proposal by, and I suggested this number initially, the proposal that we had in the draft amendment was to select 1% of the precincts across the state, equally divided amongst the 8 congressional districts, and to do that recount. In addition, the Secretary of State's office proposed, and I agreed would be a good thing to do an initial review of the procedures in those precincts to make sure that every requirement was being met. As I've thought about it, I think that the 1% number is perhaps a little low. That would amount to only 40 precincts statewide, and I think maybe a better number would be 80 precincts, which would amount to 10 in each congressional district. And one of the proposals in the draft amendment was that these precincts would be selected no more than one in each county, but that's something that we have to discuss since we have 3 of the congressional districts that only include one county, which is one reason that we need to discuss this further in order to arrive at a workable system. The initial proposal was that this review be conducted by the Secretary of State's office within 60 days after each general election. But this, to my mind, raises the biggest question, which is that, and I really don't think that we would experience this, but supposing we did this recount and discovered that there was an egregious discrepancy, say a 25% difference between the machine tally and a hand count. Question then is, what are the implications not only for the vendor to deal with and the election officials to deal with, but also for the election itself? I think that there has to be a threshold in this recount that would trigger, first of all, a broader recount. If you find one machine, for instance, in a county that, or two machines in a county that have that kind of, have any kind of margin of error beyond a given threshold, and I don't know what that threshold might be, it's something we need to discuss, then what do you do? It seems to me that one of the first things you would want to do is check more machines. And that some definition needs to be reached of what you would do. Does that mean all of the machines in the county? And if it turns out that half of the machines in the county are equally in error, do you go beyond that, and how do you define that procedure? And there's another question, which is that if we do this 60 days after the general election, it would be conducted after the election was already certified. So if you do discover great discrepancies, then what is, how do we deal with that with an already certified election? And I have had a discussion with Representative Lipman on these issues, and I'd be happy to give him an opportunity to respond at this point, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yes, and I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. the questions raised by Representative Hilty and Ellison, namely, what happens if you have big system failure, and who bears the cost of unwinding that or resolving big system failures by any equipment that's purchased? I think is a good one. Let me just summarize briefly for members the current protections that we have. One is that if it's a close result in a precinct, there's the automatic recount. There is contest practice under Chapter 209. If any of the voters or candidates think that there is something egregious, now it's true that's at their own expense. And also, with certified machines, there's been a particularly low error rate in our common experience. I think if you talk to your local elections director, particularly if they've had access and familiarity and use and experience with precinct ballot counts, they'll tell you themselves from their own experience that having gone through the recount practice, the results are frequently spot on. But that doesn't suggest that big errors couldn't happen. I think as we move forward, particularly into state government finance, the way to solve or address those problems, and for my own personal opinion, would be twofold. One is, if we can get some agreement as to who should underwrite that audit, whether it's a state appropriation or whether it's a mandate to local counties, and clearly there'll be vigorous discussion on